The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Sex galore, but no more marriages. No one pushing baby carriages. No one has to change a nappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's happy now. Oh, dope for tea and dope for dinner. Fun all night and love and laughter. No remorse the morning after. Where's the sin and who's the sinner? Everybody's happy now. Girls dramatic, girls exotic, girls ecstatic, girls erotic. Hug me, baby, make it snappy. Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So much cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
And ladies and gentlemen, it's the Gnostic Media Broadcast. And this is your host, Jan Ervin. Hope you had a great weekend, and, well, we're back here for some more enlightening information with the recent White House turning into rainbow colors and the Facebook rainbow avatar phishing thing that was reported up on the RBN website earlier this week. All of this stuff going on, I figured couldn't have a better guest than today's, and we're going to be joined by Curtis Duncan, who is a holistic health and weight loss expert, and he's spent close to 12 years doing his own research on health and wellness, and I've had him on the Gnostic Media podcast twice before, and the most recent time was on December 31st, and we discussed homosexuality and the chemical manipulation of humanity. And his first interview with me back in 2012 was the conspiracy to feminize males and masculinize females. And Curtis has done a lot of research, medical background research, into looking at how phytoestrogens and things like soy chemicals in the food supply and in our environment cause gender changes in not only people who are alive now, but say people, infants or fetuses for that matter, is what I'm trying to get out there. So anyway, Curtis Duncan, welcome to the Gnostic Media Broadcast.
Thank you for having me on, Jan. It's a pleasure to be on with you again.
Well, Curtis, I didn't give a very thorough background on you, so do you want to start off by telling the audience about yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, thank you again for your introduction, and thank you again for having me on. As you mentioned, my name is Curtis Duncan. I am an independent health researcher. I've spent close to about the past 12 years doing independent research. It started off when I was around the age of 18, and I just wanted to learn more about health. About to be 32 now. But I just wanted to learn more about health and just nutrition, and I didn't really subscribe to the idea that people were designed to be sick, and you get old and you get sick and suffer heart disease, etc. So just a lot of independent health research. I think at one point early in my health research, I came across a lot of the vegan propaganda. But I will say at the time it did at least open my eyes to some of the things that I was eating. Did a lot of research into just nutrition, health, and it just, as time went along, start doing more, you know, deeper research into chemicals, because, you know, when we're talking about health, nutrition, you know, people oftentimes tend to neglect chemicals. And how I came across the information that we'll be talking about tonight was just some, you know, I've heard this before from people that, you know, some of the estrogens in the meat, and this was specifically from like a vegan health expert, that some of the estrogens in the meat were, you know, causing homosexuality. And I kind of was like, wow, you know, that's really fascinating. I had always heard of this information for a long time, but I never really did too much research into it. And then I just came across an article discussing how a chemical known as phthalates, which is found in plastics, cause boys to be less masculine and to be more feminine in their play. So, you know, just from seeing that article, this link, it just, you know, I just did like this, gathered tremendous amount of data. And then I put out the recording, The Chemical Feminization and Masculation of Men. And, you know, that got a lot of people's attention, you know, in regards to this information. So, you know, just done a lot of independent health research on my own. I read a lot of studies. And oftentimes when I read these studies, it has a lot of information in there that if you don't dig as deep, you just won't get. And that's why I like the whole, these scientific journals are like, you get to pay money to get access to them. And really, it's only like a select few of people who actually, you know what's in some of those studies. So that's just kind of like a brief synopsis of myself and my background.
All right. Well, I wanted to tell a little story about, you know, today I was driving down the road and I had satellite radio on, and it was the Family and Health show on satellite. And they had this woman doctor on, and I was listening to her talk about osteoporosis and all of these different related issues. And as I'm listening to her, she's promoting the whole low-fat, low-cholesterol diet. You got to drink low-fat milk, eat low-fat cheese, low-fat sour cream, etc. And she's talking about osteoporosis and all of these other health problems. She never once mentions vitamin K2, which of course is found in grass-fed butter and grass-fed milk and cheese and all of this stuff, and meats, etc. And she promotes, throughout this interview, she was promoting this whole low-fat agenda that you and I have exposed previously, and you and I had talked about veganism and vegetarianism, and I should say that I was vegan and vegetarian for about 12 years, and it landed me in the ICU, and it's the single worst thing that I've ever done to myself, and there were some other causes, too. I had picked up a bacteria when I lived in Yugoslavia when the U.S. government bombed the water treatment plant in Belgrade. I picked something up then, but I got that treated and was able to get over just the bacteria aspect. And then there was still the lingering effects of the, you know, vegan diet, which you essentially called the grain diet or the carbohydrate diet. And of course, you know, so when I got back to the United States, I immediately started getting sick again, but the symptoms were slightly different because the doctors, and I had to actually go to South America to get treated for these health problems. I had been to a dozen doctors in the U.S. over 15 years, and they all failed. And all of them would tell me, you know, it's not things like wheat, et cetera. And anyway, so started getting sick again. And then I came across Dr. Davis's work and had him on my show. Came across work like yours and like Sally Fallon, et cetera. Get off the grains, get on a high-fat diet. Suddenly, all of my health problems start reversing. Now, another thing that the reason why I'm bringing this up is another thing that we discover with this low-fat diet that's been promoted by the medical industry, and every year people are sicker and sicker and heavier and heavier, and they keep promoting it, and they keep telling people, you know, saturated fat is bad, cholesterol is bad, and you need to eat your oatmeal, you need to eat your whole grain bread, you need to have this low-fat diet, low eggs, low butter, all of this stuff. And we've seen everyone
get progressively worse and worse and worse. And two of the main things that this low-fat diet in particular destroys are the brain, because the brain is over 70% cholesterol, around 77% cholesterol or hydroxycholesterol, as well as, which is your area of expertise, the reproductive system.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, a low-fat diet, essentially, because you, in order to produce, men's health, in order to produce testosterone, you need to consume fat, essentially, because fat are the building blocks of most of your hormones. So,
are you,
adequate amount of healthy
excuse
fat,
me, Curtis, are you
will
on
not
a,
be able to produce adequate amounts of testosterone?
Hold on a second, Curtis. Are you on your wireless, or because I'm hearing you're very choppy. Hello.
Oh, yeah, I am on a Wi-Fi. Yes, I am on a Wi-Fi connection right now. There's nothing. Yeah, I am on a Wi-Fi connection.
All right. Well, it's choppy. We may have to have you switch to a phone during the break or something because it's so choppy. So, all right. Well, anyway, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt. We'll see if we can work that out later. Go ahead. Hello? Are you there?
Okay. Yeah, I was saying that without adequate amounts of I'm here.
Go ahead. There, I think we must have about a 20-second delay. Go ahead and talk. Don't wait so long in between.
Okay. I was saying that without adequate amounts of fat, you cannot produce adequate amounts of testosterone. So men who are on essentially a low-fat diet, they will become infertile and, you know, be impotent. Not only that, if they're consuming a lot of grains in replacement of fat, they're going to have this huge amount of belly fat, which converts all your testosterone into estrogen. Now, for women, you know, consuming a low-fat diet would actually cause numerous health problems in them, including type 2 diabetes, belly fat, obesity, and it also reduces their levels of fertility, because in order to be fertile as a woman, you need adequate amounts of fat, essentially. Because fat are the building blocks of most of your sex hormones, including estrogen and testosterone. So a lot of times, you know, when people are consuming these low-fat diets, they're really doing themselves a disservice, because the majority of the time they're replacing the fat for the carbohydrates. So they're eating like low-fat yogurt, and the low-fat yogurt, in order to have more flavor, they're going to add more sugar to it. So the more sugar you consume, the fatter you'll be and the more diabetic you will be.
All right, and what, in your opinion, is the impact of the low-fat diet on other areas of the body, as well as on thinking?
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of the low-fat diet, I mean, it causes, you know, the main problem with the low-fat diet is that it does not, you know, it's kind of like a starvation diet. So you're not essentially giving the body what it needs. In order to really, you know, healthy diets, even like, you know, diets like paleo diets, quote-unquote, those diets were comprised about 50% fat. So, you know, according to U.S. government standards, you should be consuming no more than 30% fat. And that's just not enough in order to fuel your brain, in order to actually have adequate amounts of energy. So a lot of people, you know, when they're consuming these low-fat diets, and again, you know, I like to say low-fat, high-grain diets, they have no energy because they're consuming wheat. So the wheat makes them lethargic. It gives them a low amounts of energy. It raises their insulin levels, which makes them a glutton and a sloth, because they're constantly eating and they're constantly tired, don't want to work out. And in terms of your brain, you know, without consuming adequate amounts of fat, your brain is not going to be as healthy, because, as you mentioned, your brain is comprised of close to 70% cholesterol. So if you're not consuming adequate amounts of fat in order to fuel your brain, then you're just not going to be able to have as much brain power as is necessary in order to function well throughout the day. A lot of people who, you know, don't get adequate amounts of fish oil, for example, they have higher rates of suicidality and homicide, particularly if they're consuming the wrong types of fats. You know, because most people in America, instead of consuming saturated fat, they're consuming omega-6 fats, which include safflower oil, sunflower oil, soybean oil, canola oil, etc. So they're consuming large amounts of omega-6 fats when, you know, when really we should be consuming a lot more omega-3 fats, which come from the grass-fed beef, which comes from consuming dietary fish, and that is linked with lower rates of depression, lower rates of suicidality, and lower rates of homicidality. But here in America, we're just, you know, we're ODing on these bad fats, the trans fats, which cause depression and other illnesses such as ADHD.
Let me just jump in, and most of these are they're polyunsaturated fats, which of course also can lead to cancer, especially with a high grain diet. They can also lead with a high grain diet. They also lead to heart disease, but most of these plant oils are a new invention that haven't been around for more than 100 years, with the exclusion of coconut oil, palm kernel oil, olive oil, and maybe hemp oil. That's probably, you know, the only oils, maybe one or two other, avocado or something like that. But that's pretty much all the people had historically in the way of plant oils, and they were always fresh. And, you know, so what they've done is essentially, and now they've lowered the cholesterol level to 175. And when people get over 175, they tell them, you know, you need statin drugs and all of this stuff, which, of course, further damages the brain and the reproductive system, et cetera, from there. And, you know, so when you look at all of this as a whole, you know, it can't be by mistake that they are promoting vegetable oils, which without enough K2 in the diet, which comes from grass-fed butter and dairy and meat, etc., without enough of that, you get the heart disease, you get the cancer from the polyunsaturated oils, along with the sugar and the grains. And I should mention gas. I mean, for those of you out in the audience who have gas problems, you know, cut the sugar and the grains out of your diet, and the body essentially becomes like a little brewery, like you know, and you're letting off gas just like the top of the beer vat lets off carbon dioxide, etc., during the brew process. You know, but one thing, you know, and you pointed out, usually the paleo diet is about 50%, and I'll say, with the exclusion, you know, Dave Asprey does promote in his version of the quote-unquote paleo or the bulletproof diet, he does promote 70% fat, and he promotes low inflammation foods and, you know, vegetables with the grains and not juicing, because, of course, juicing is another big issue. What can you say about juicing and sugars and all of that?
Yeah, juicing is, you know, when you juice a fruit in particular, it's no better than drinking a soda. You know, you might as well drink. But if you're going to juice something like apple juice, for example, that has almost to about 40 grams of carbohydrate, you know, in like 1 8-ounce serving. So, you know, if you get a can of Coke that has about 34 grams, and you're just overloading your liver with high amounts of fructose, and, you know, the fructose is going to convert into fat. It's going to increase your risk of type 2 diabetes. It's going to increase your triglycerides. It's going to increase the risk of developing fatty liver disease. And it's also going to increase your risk of heart disease, along with increasing your risk of type 2 diabetes, dramatically raising your blood sugar levels. So now people want to juice. The only types of juice they should really juice are vegetable juices, and not like canned beets, but like celery. You know, maybe something like wheatgrass juice, you know, things that have very, very low amounts of sugar. But, you know, really, I mean, the only type I recommend to people, it will be vegetable juice, like your spinach juice, kale juice. I mean, if you can tolerate the taste, this stuff is pretty bitter. I prefer to eat my green vegetables, you know.
We have a break, Curtis. And you know what? Let's have you call by phone on the other number during the break here.
Make it snappy. Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's in laughter.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And Mike, do we have Curtis on the phone yet?
There he is.
Hey, Curtis, you there?
Yes.
All right. Well, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for the technical difficulty there with Skype. So we have Curtis by phone now, so hopefully it'll be much more clear. Curtis, do you hear me all right?
Yes, I hear you very well.
All right, great. And it sounds like we got rid of that awful delay, too. So again, my apologies, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so let's dive right in. Lately, we've been seeing this whole promotion of, well, this whitewashing of gender roles and everything, trying to make men women, women men, trying, you know, we see metrosexuality being promoted everywhere. We see all of this stuff. But is this just an issue of, you know, gay rights, or is there a whole deeper underlying issue going on with all of this that isn't being talked about in the media and elsewhere?
Well, in terms of you know, the chemical, or in terms of the whole the chemicals that are out there, and you know, and the effects that this is having, the deeper agenda is population control. That's the reason why these chemicals were invented, was for population control reasons. And, you know, and evidence of that is, number one, the fact that the chemicals do cause homosexuality within the womb. They feminize men, meaning that, you know, men will be born biologically male, but they'll have a brain of a woman and will later behave like women. And in terms of women, you know, these chemicals will masculinize a woman's brain, meaning that she'll be biologically female, but she'll have the brain of a man and will behave like a man later on. So the deeper issue is for people to not reproduce with each other, because if you're attracted to men, you're not going to have any kids. And if you're attracted to women, you know, and you're a woman, you're not going to have any kids. So the deeper issue is population control, in terms of, you know, in terms of these gender bending chemicals. But on a deeper level, even beyond that, is the fact that the chemicals also sterilize people. And they sterilize people for generations into infinity. You know, and they do this by changing the way our genes express. It's a science known as epigenetics. And essentially what the chemicals do is that if you're exposed to the chemical within the womb, so you've already been feminized, you know, your penis is smaller, meaning you can't reproduce. You might have hypospadia, meaning you can't reproduce. You might have, you know, undescended testicles, meaning you can't reproduce. So you're exposed to all this stuff, you know, within the womb already, you know, and many people, again, turn out oftentimes through exposures to be homosexual as well. But not only that, later on, you know, due to the exposure that occurs in the womb, it actually changed the way your genes express. So for future generations, future male generations will have the same.
All right, we have another break, Curtis. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So my cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and we've got the bumper music for last week's show with Eric Penn playing there. That's pretty funny. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Curtis Duncan talking about, oh, the feminization of males and masculinization of females and how it's done through diet and phytoestrogens, soy, phthalates, various chemicals. And so Curtis, what were you talking about when before we went to break?
I was stating that the overall agenda here is population control. The reason why, you know, these chemicals, I was finishing up my statement on the chemicals cause multi-generational infertility. So in women, they cause multi-generational polycystic ovarian syndrome, which, you know, essentially is a condition where women become infertile and they start producing high amounts of testosterone and cause a lot of women to develop facial hair and et cetera. And in terms of men, it actually, you know, it causes a multi-generational infertility. So men, you know, aren't, you know, essentially through exposure to the chemicals, generations down the line, you know, through something known as epigenetics and the fact that the chemicals change the way our genes express, they cause multi-generational infertility, essentially. So, and this happens, you know, through a one-time exposure that can occur within the womb. So the overall goal is population control. It is eugenics. And that's why, you know, close to 100,000 of these chemicals have been created since like early 1900s. And they've never been tested, and they've just been dumped onto the population ever since the early 1900s.
Let me ask you, what do you have to say to people who criticize you that you're just attacking homosexuality?
Well, I would say that I'm not attacking homosexuality at all. I'm attacking homosexuality chemicals. There is a difference. If I were to offer some type of value judgment against homosexuality, I'm not here, you know, I've never done that. And I've never publicly stated anything about homosexuality. But I am attacking homosexuality chemicals because these chemicals have been intentionally released onto the populace for population control and eugenics reasons. And according to the United Nations, that is a form of genocide. Anytime you try to artificially decrease a population of people, then that is genocide. When you're trying to sterilize people, when you're trying to cause people to be gay so they won't reproduce, that is population control. And that is a coercive form of a genocide, essentially. So that would be no different than, you know, me going into a village and just, you know, putting fluoride in the water, you know, in order to kill off people, you know, by sterilizing them or what have you. And fluoride actually does do that. But I couldn't think of a really good analogy. But no, I mean, I'm attacking homosexuality causing chemicals because these chemicals are found in 94% of our drinking water. They're found in our food. They're found in the air. They're everywhere. So that's what I'm attacking. I'm not offering a value judgment on people's sexual orientation or homosexuality.
All right, and let's get into soy. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us?
Soy. So soy is a very extremely powerful endocrine disruptor because most of these chemicals, to give people a scientific frame of reference, so they won't just think we're a bunch of conspiracy theorists, a scientific frame of reference, the chemicals are known as endocrine disrupting chemicals. So that essentially means that the chemicals either block certain hormones or act like certain hormones. That's very key. They either block certain hormones or act like certain hormones. So, for example, a chemical known as phthalates, it mimics estrogen, but also blocks testosterone. So when a developing male fetus is exposed to phthalates within the womb, the testosterone that would normally get secreted and masculinized his brain is blocked. So essentially he develops the mind of a woman because there is no testosterone available. Now, when a woman is exposed to phthalates, that chemical mimics estrogen. So that's why it actually causes increased rates of breast cancer and early puberty in women. And soy is a very, very powerful endocrine disrupting chemical. And most of the soy, as people know, is genetically modified. But beyond the dangers of GMOs, soy itself, you know, in terms of how it affects people's, you know, just overall health, it blocks testosterone and mimics estrogen. So if you're a developing male fetus, and you're having your testosterone blocked by your mom consuming soy because she's a vegan or, you know, she thinks soy is healthy for her because she's on a low-fat diet. So a lot of people who consume low-fat foods, they consume a lot of soy. Soy is also used in virtually all of the fast foods. You know, they use like soybean oil. Soy is also given to a lot of animals. You know, even though animals cannot consume soy, they're meant to consume grass or other types of natural vegetation, not soy. So this all increases the amounts of estrogen that is people are being exposed to via their diet. And again, this will block the testosterone for men, you know, which will feminize them and will hyper-estrogenize the women, you know, in the womb, which will masculinize the women. But once they get out of the womb, it'll increase their risk of endometriosis, fibroids. It will also increase the risk of having thyroid problems. It will increase the risk of breast cancer and a whole host of reproductive issues, which are driven by estrogen. Essentially, a lot of women today are extremely estrogen dominant, and this causes a whole host of problems, including weight gain, obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease. That's why, you know, it was found that a lot of women who would take some of these hormone replacement drugs had increased risk of heart disease. It's because of the too much estrogen that they are being exposed to. So essentially, soy is a very extremely dangerous endocrine disrupting chemical that mimics estrogen. When you give, for example, a developing male baby, high amounts of soy infant formula, you know, that boy is actually, it's continuing to develop. So it is secreting testosterone in order to develop. But when you give him that, that's like giving him 5 birth control pills, essentially, in the amount of estrogen that is in that soy infant formula. So that will cause him to be infertile later on in life. It also could cause, problems with the development of his penis. So his penis will be smaller than normal, which will increase his risk of infertility. And according to the whole soy story, it also could essentially cause the young developing boy to be more feminine, to be gay, because he is essentially still developing and his brain is still being masculinized. And if you block that with high amounts of phytoestrogens, which are found in soy, then that will cause him to be gay later on in life. So soy is extremely toxic. The only type of soy people should ever consume is the fermented organic soy, and that's what they consume in the Far East. They consume miso, natto, et cetera, in very, very low amounts. They don't consume high amounts of soy. You know, it's actually considered to be a poverty food. But here in America, it's a grain. We grow it, just in droves. We give it to our cows. You know, we put it in our processed foods, our fast foods. So people are just being over-estrogenized by all the amounts of soy that's in our diet.
All right, you know, and the Food and Drug Administration lists soy as a poison more than 240 times. You know, and I mentioned at the beginning of the show, listening to the radio earlier today, and this woman doctor promoting all this low-fat stuff. Another thing I heard was they were talking about the opening up Cuba's borders for trade, et cetera, and how they could start selling soy and corn into Cuba to feed livestock and chickens. Now, do you have any idea what the impact is on livestock and chickens and such that are fed soy? And then what is the impact on humans who consume this stuff? And obviously livestock, cows never develop the ability to, farm and grow grains and soybeans, so therefore they eat grass, So what is the impact when they eat soybeans?
So essentially, when animals eat soybeans, they become sick, essentially. It decreases their immunity. So that's why a lot of times, like grain-fed animals do have, they do have greater risk of E. coli because their digestive system just can't handle it. They just can't handle consuming all the amounts of, the large amounts of soy. And what happens is that those phytoestrogens, so for example, if you're giving soy to chickens, that increases the amount of estrogen that is found within eggs that you consume, on a consistent basis. And I love eggs. Big fan of eggs. I usually make a breakfast out of eggs. But if you're consuming eggs, you're consuming chickens that have been fed a high soy or high grain diet, then that increases the amount of soy estrogens in those eggs. And it will also increase the amount of phytoestrogen because essentially, when animals are consuming all the soy, they absorb all that estrogen. So then when you eat those animals, then you are going to consume those phytoestrogens as well. So number one, it makes the animals sick because it's almost like, giving us grains when human beings consume grains, because it's not natural for human beings to consume large amounts of grain. we consume grains. Let
me just add to that, Curtis. When we feed cattle grains, the reason why they even do that is so that the cattle are fattened up for slaughter in a year rather than 2 to 3 like it would normally take. And so, when you look around and you see all of these obese people everywhere, and of course now they're trying to normalize the obesity so that it's not, people aren't even aware that they're obese. But, all of this normalization of the obesity, you can see it transposed directly from, the effects on the cattle and livestock over to humans. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, the fact that, we're seeing all this obesity in humans is directly, it's for the exact same reasons, that you see the obesity in the animals. It's because, we give the animals high amounts of grain, corn, soy, et cetera, and that makes them sick, and they, become obese as well. And when we consume wheat, we consume, oats and all these other grains, then we also get fat and we get sick. And, we usually get sick by developing type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And if you want to understand essentially, the mother of all diseases, you have to understand blood sugar and you have to understand insulin. Virtually all diseases that are out there, from type 2 diabetes to Alzheimer's to cancer, are directly linked to high levels of insulin. Insulin feeds cancer.
Well, and low fat, wouldn't you say as well? Because, obviously if the brain is low on fat and can't get the fuel it needs, that would lead to Alzheimer's and Parkinson's as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you're consuming low fat diet, then you will. First of all, you'll be depressed, so you'll feel crappy, you'll be moody. And oftentimes people who consume low fat diets are consuming high sugar, high grain diets. Those things will increase the risk of developing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's because the brain, as you mentioned, needs adequate amounts of fat in order to properly function. So if you're not getting, if your brain is naturally supposed to burn fat as fuel, and you're not giving the brain that fuel that it needs, which is healthy fats, then it's going to start burning sugars essentially. And most people, that's what they do. They consume less fats and replace those with carbohydrate. So your brain will then start burning, the fuel that is available, the sugar. So then that will increase the risk of developing MS. It will increase the risk of developing Parkinson's, and it will increase the risk of developing Alzheimer's. Because the brain actually has receptors which are sensitive to insulin. So essentially, if the brain can develop insulin resistance, essentially. And brain insulin resistance is what Alzheimer's disease is. So essentially, and of course, if you're not consuming adequate amounts of fat, because, healthy fats such as omega-3 fats actually reduce the levels of insulin resistance throughout the body and increase insulin sensitivity. But if you develop insulin resistance within the brain, so you'll become dumber, what sugar does. It actually makes people dumber. It actually shrinks their brain cells. And later on in life, you will develop a whole host of brain disorders and Alzheimer's disease.
And we should mention glycolysis versus ketosis as well. And essentially what we're describing here is the two energy systems that the body can function on. And one is fight or flight and famine, and the other is our normal state of being and health. And so what the medical community has essentially done over the last 100 years since the planting of all of the wheat that caused the Dust Bowl and all of that is they've switched everyone from a ketosis diet to a glycolysis diet. So glycolysis, as it sounds, it's basically a sugar diet. It's high in grains, high in sugars, high in fructose, lots of processed foods to say the least. And The ketosis diet is high in fat, high in eggs, high in dairy, high in cholesterol, all of these things. And essentially what happens is when you're in your body's normal state in ketosis, you're telling your body that you're not in famine, you're not in fight or flight. And so then the body uses all of the fat and all of the cholesterol, and we're talking saturated fat and animal cholesterol. We're not talking about all of this bad cholesterol from grains. And they've actually lied to everyone, and they've distorted that it's the bad cholesterol is from the grains, and they've tricked everyone into thinking that it's from the meat and the dairy and the eggs. But so if you're living in a state of glycolysis for your entire life, you're going to end up with diabetes. You're going to either end up with irritable bowel syndrome and lose weight, or obesity. You'll probably end up with all sorts of skin problems, acne, eczema, psoriasis, etc., hair problems. All of these things follow. And, you know, another thing that I noticed when I was, you know, when I switched from being vegan and vegetarian over to a high fat, high meat, high protein diet with vegetables, that, you know, prior to switching, I could string like 15 or 20 thoughts together without having a brain fart. But after switching, I could easily string, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 thoughts along and not have any trouble with that.
Absolutely. What you said, I mean, what you said is key, because it does increase your brain power. You know, for people who have Alzheimer's disease and even cancer, you know, the number one thing that people recommend for that is the keto diet, essentially, which is a high fat diet and like a very, 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 very low carb diet. And that cures them of their disease. So, you know, again, if you're starving your brain, that's why so many people, you know, they're just carpaholics.
Yeah, let's hold that thought and we'll be right back.
Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and so much cocktails and no more thinking, no more thinking, no more thinking. Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And Curtis, let's jump right back into it. You were discussing starving the brain before we went on break, and I had just mentioned glycolysis versus ketosis diets.
Yeah, essentially, you know, if you're not giving the brain the fuel that it needs, then it will not function as properly. So, you know, oftentimes, you know, here in America, you know, schizophrenia is high. You know, have all these mental illnesses. You know, and a lot of the mental illnesses are caused by wheat. They're caused by the grains, you know, sugar in particular. By wheat and sugar, and when you're not giving the brain adequate amounts of fat, in particular healthy fat, then you essentially lower your brain's capacity and power, and you increase your risk of depression. And for people who have, you know, people who have MS and who have Alzheimer's disease, one of the things that, you know, is recommended by many medical professionals now is a ketogenic diet, which essentially is a
sure.
high fat.
You know, and to interrupt you for a second, I interviewed this guy, Mike, on my show a couple of years ago, who cured his MS by getting off of wheat and going on to a high fat, high cholesterol diet. And a woman at the local post office here, she's got MS. I've gotten her off of the wheat. I've been trying to get her onto a high fat diet now for a couple of years. She's still chicken. She gets that wheat is very bad, but she's not yet ready to take the next step and realize that the cure to MS, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a medical professional, so I can say the word cure, but the cure is essentially going on a high fat, high cholesterol diet. And another thing with wheat, ladies and gentlemen, is that it contains something called gluteomorphine. And there are actually addictive properties in wheat that when you stop eating wheat, it takes usually 2 to 3 weeks, and 3 weeks is your average time, for instance, to break heroin addiction or alcohol addiction. And the wheat addiction is also broken at around 3 weeks. So it's addictive on top of it. And then also what they've done is when you crave salt or fat, what they do is they get you to, with salt, for instance, they get you to go eat a cracker or something, a snack, when in actuality, you're craving the salt. And salt is a whole other issue that I don't think you and I have talked about before on these shows. But, you know, there's a whole big scam with the low salt thing as well, and your whole body functions on it. But they've tricked everyone when you need fat to go get something sweet and sugary, and when you need salt to go get some sort of grain cracker type snack. And this is how they've perpetuated this, by fooling everybody to not be able to recognize when your body is craving fats and salt. And interestingly, just one more point here, and then I'll give it back to you before the break, but the number one thing that children steal, young children steal, is butter. Now, why would butter be the one of the largest things that young children steal? And parents, you know, I highly recommend, you know, instead of having your kids sneak into the kitchen, I did it, my mom did it, my sister did it, I've talked to a lot of other people. Very many of them say that they stole butter as young children. And just let your children know that there's good Kerrygold grass-fed butter in the fridge, and go in there and help themselves whenever they want it.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, the fact that we're not getting those healthy fats, it's driving a lot of these ailments. And I know for me, I mean, I didn't, you know, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, when I was younger, you know, I used to consume, I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah, hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So my cocktails and no more thinking, no more thinking, no more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now. Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And you know what, Curtis? What is your website? Is it drcurtisduncan.com? And I should mention, caveat there, that you have a bachelor's in business, but you are a primary researcher. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, my website is drcurtisduncan.com. That's drcurtisduncan.com. That is my website where you can check me out, all the information that I have, the products and services, consultations, recordings, etc. at the website.
And just like myself, you run on donations as well, so anybody who can contribute, please do. Of course, we appreciate it. And these shows are all our own, the hard sweat and tears, and we're not paid for them except by you, the listening audience. So anyway, so you can't believe it's not butter, huh? You like to eat lots of that stuff as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, Crisco, all the trans fats, you know. And that's when I was 18 is when I came across information that trans fats were horrible, you know, and I was like, you know, people should start using butter. And, you know, all this stuff was revolutionary to me. And it was intentional by, you know, the plant-based manufacturers. What they did is that in the early 1900s, they demonized lard. They demonized butter. They demonized all these traditional fats that people have been eating for centuries. And they said, you need to get on, you know, Crisco. You need to get on trans fats. So, you know, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, depression, a whole bunch of mental illnesses went through the roof. And, you know, people were just, okay, well, we'll just take a pill to cure it. And the pills didn't do anything, but it was very intentional. So people, I mean, you know, it's good that people are going back to the lard, they're going back to the bacon fat, they're going back to the butter, the real grass-fed butter, the coconut oil, you know, the ghee, et cetera. Because these fats have been consumed for thousands of years. You know, without any problems.
And you know what? Isn't it interesting when you start using your bacon grease, et cetera, you do need to buy butter, but when you use your bacon grease, aside from butter and maybe your coconut oil, you don't need any of this other oil. You always have a ready supply of good quality fat right there for all of your cooking needs. You know, and I do remember several years ago when I did start using bacon grease, at first it kind of grossed me out, you know, but you start feeling so much better. And, you know, if you really low cook your bacon grease, it stays nice and clean and white and everything. But all of this, as you said, you know, they had to market all of this. They had to create these oils, and then they had to lie about lard and tallow and all of the butter and all of these fats. and then literally market these toxic vegetable oils and margarines and Crisco, et cetera, you know, the vegetable shortening to the public.
Absolutely. And oftentimes, like the soybean industry, they use so-called consumer front groups, CSPI. It's like a consumer front group that, you know, they demonize McDonald's for killing people with their saturated fats in the early 1980s, because McDonald's actually used to use tallow, and they used to use coconut oil in order to fry popcorn. So when you went to movie theater, your popcorn was fried in coconut oil.
Yep, and it was actually good for you, ladies and gentlemen. Your McDonald's French fries before the mid-1980s were actually good for you because they were cooked in tallow. And, you know, there is some mold issues with potatoes. That's a different subject. But in general, with the tallow, that stuff was nutritious. It wasn't the toxic, you know, French fries that we have today.
Absolutely. So they went from, you know, tallow to using trans fats, because that's what the restaurants used to use. The FDA recently banned trans fats, and now they're just using, you know, genetically modified canola and soybean oil, which is still toxic because those oils are not meant to be heated. So when you heat them, they oxidize. And when you oxidize fat, that gets into your body, and it turns into oxidized cholesterol, which then clogs your arteries. So it's the oxidized fats which are killing people. And when you're consuming, you know, fats that have very low levels of saturation, then you increase your risk of developing heart disease because the oxidized fats actually clog your arteries up.
And let me just add to that, Curtis. When you look at oils, there's three primary types of oils. There are polyunsaturated fats, monounsaturated, and saturated. Saturated fats means that it's a closed molecule, and essentially there's no place for oxygen to get in to oxidize it and to make it toxic. Monounsaturated oils like coconut oil and palm kernel oil, they only have one place where oxygen can get in. And polyunsaturated, well, the word poly means many. So there are many places where oxygen can get in and cause oxidization and make these vegetable oils toxic. So almost all of the trans fats are, in fact, these toxic vegetable oils. Now, you know, way back in the day, I was one of the key proponents for the California Hemp Initiative. And, excuse me, we had a woman who is the biochemist at UCLA, and she actually, you know, and I've got a number of her talks, and looking back at that, she actually went around and promoted that the saturated fats, that the butter, the meat fats, the bacon grease were the trans fats. This was Dr. Roberta Hamilton, and it's a flat out lie. Trans fats is the vegetable oils, and hemp oil is in fact a polyunsaturated seed oil, and you know, there's also issues with oxalic acid and all of this other stuff with these seed oils, including hemp oil.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, polyunsaturated fats, you know, should absolutely never be heated, and they should, you know, the consumption of them should be very low. You know, it wasn't until the early 1900s when our levels of polyunsaturated fats increased, because people were consuming mostly saturated and some monounsaturated fats, such as sesame oil, et cetera. But now, like, our levels of polyunsaturated fats is just through the roof. And, you know, that's another reason why we have a lot more health problems. We have brain problems, because, as I mentioned, the polyunsaturated fats, you know, the brain uses that as, you know, as the kind of, you know, the brain uses that in replacement of saturated fats, particularly if you're not giving the brain saturated fats. And those polyunsaturated fats, they actually cause your brain to not work as well. So that's why a lot of people consume a lot of these fats. They have higher rates of suicide, higher rates of depression, and higher rates of mental illness. You know, and that's probably the main reason why vegans have probably some of the highest rates of mental illness, because they're just getting extremely low levels of saturated fat. And the fats they are getting are mostly polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats. They're not getting virtually any, they're not getting any cholesterol and any saturated fats whatsoever.
And I should say that the brain does love and eats up rather quickly monounsaturated fats and like monochain triglycerides as well. That's a nice little pick-me-up if you eat a tablespoon of MCT oil, which is monochain triglyceride oil, in the morning. But again, yeah, like you said, you know, stay away from these. You know, you should never cook or heat olive oil or any of these seed oils, any of the canola or rapeseed oil, the sunflower oil, safflower oil, corn, you know, corn, any of these oils. They should never be eaten. They actually get toxic. And the process that they use to treat many of these vegetable oils to keep them from going rancid, it'll make your hair stand on end. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, there's only a few things, four or five oils that you should be using. You know, maybe olive oil, coconut, palm kernel, your bacon grease, and your butter. You know, and if you eat, you know, if you stick with those things, you'll keep nice and healthy, and actually your heart disease will go down as well. And I've interviewed Dr. Kate Ramblou on vitamin K2 and how all of this stuff relates to heart disease. And maybe I'll bring her on the show, as well as some of the other people I've had on discussing these issues as well. Did you want to switch gears now over to phthalates? Well, you know what? Before we go into phthalates, let's talk about GMO food and corn and all of this stuff and its impact on sexuality and being able to reproduce.
Well, the first thing is that, you know, most genetically modified foods, you know, the history of this is that they're created by Monsanto. And what most people don't know about Monsanto is that they used to be a chemical company. So Monsanto, for a long time, they were just involved in chemicals. They did not touch food at all. They were just involved in chemicals. So Monsanto, and, you know, interesting fact about them, they were them and Dow Chemical. So you have Monsanto and Dow Chemical, and we'll probably talk about them a little bit later. They were the two governmental contractors to produce Agent Orange, which is a chemical that the United States government sprayed all throughout Vietnam during the Vietnam War. It killed close to 200,000 Vietnamese people. And the whole reason why this was done was to starve the Vietnamese people. It had nothing to do with defoliating the forest, had nothing to do with that. Henry Kissinger, who was Secretary of State at that time, and McNamara, they wanted to starve and kill off the Vietnamese people, the civilians, the peasants, etc. So they sprayed this. They had the veterans spray all this stuff all throughout the country. So then the veterans came back, and they were sick, and they actually sued Monsanto. But, of course, you know, the court system granted the veterans no recourse because the courts were controlled by Monsanto and by the big defense contractors or war contractors. So Monsanto, they were heavily involved in creating the chemical known as Agent Orange, which contained high amounts of dioxin. So they were essentially a chemical company, and they also created PCBs. Now, the interesting thing about dioxins and PCBs, both chemicals are homosexuality chemicals. There was a study done in Europe which showed that exposure to dioxins caused boys to want to wear dresses and play with dolls. Same thing with PCBs. And PCBs, they were banned in the early 1980s. But they're still found in fish. They're still found, you know, throughout the world, because these chemicals, once they get out, they know no boundaries. And the earth is just like one big balloon. You know, once you release a chemical one place, it's going to end up, you know, all over the entire world. So now, you know, up until today, Monsanto now is involved with genetically modifying food. But the reason why they're genetically modifying food is to be resistant to their chemical again, which is Roundup. And Roundup is extremely, very, very toxic chemical. It's the world's number one use pesticide. And this chemical, it actually blocks testosterone. So, you know, again, in terms of a developing male fetus, his testosterone is blocked. So it's going to feminize him, essentially. He's going to be a biological male with the brain of a female because, you know, all the high amounts of Roundup, which is found in genetically modified canola, genetically modified soy, genetically modified corn, genetically modified cotton. You know, people are like, oh, I don't consume cotton. Well, you probably do because, you know, in many fast food restaurants, they use cotton seed oil. You know, if you buy a bag of potato chips from Lay's, it will say made with the following, soy oil, cotton seed oil, or corn oil. a lot of them, all those are genetically modified and are going to contain high amounts of Roundup, which is Monsanto's top herbicide that they use. So this chemical, as I mentioned, is going to block testosterone, so it's going to feminize men. So that's the reason why. So you have that. You have the fact that Monsanto made PCBs, which, again, feminize men as well. You have the dioxin from the Agent Orange. Dioxin is the most toxic chemical to man. It was found in Agent Orange, and it's the reason why a lot of Vietnam veterans are still sick to this day. So that's the reason why GMOs in particular are linked to homosexuality, is because of the Roundup that it contains.
And, you know, with all of this, ladies and gentlemen, we're actually getting to the core of why they're promoting this monosexualization, essentially, of culture, men and women, women, men, because they need to cover up all of this genetic damage that they are essentially intentionally causing to all of us with these tactics. So, Curtis, let's get into, you've talked before with me on my show about some of the studies on frogs, et cetera. Let's get into some of that and what happened in those studies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was actually going to mention that, because one of the things that they use on corn is a chemical known as atrazine. Atrazine is a chemical produced by a company by the name of Syngenta. And I believe Monsanto, if I'm correct, they just bought Syngenta recently, you know, because Syngenta, they make the second most used herbicide throughout the world that is used widely on corn. There's a great documentary called King Corn, which talks about how corn basically just dominates our entire agricultural system and how Americans are literally corny, like most of our DNA is comprised of corn now, you know, and they do hair tests to prove this. But there's a documentary called King Corn that people can check out. And in the documentary, they talk about, you know, corn and they talk about how they're spraying these pesticides. And one of the pesticides that they spray is a chemical known as atrazine. And it's produced by a company by the name of Syngenta, which is actually a spinoff of a pharmaceutical company known as Novartis. They're a major pharmaceutical company that produces breast cancer drugs, prostate cancer drugs, et cetera. So atrazine, there was a researcher by the name of Dr. Tyrone Davis, and I believe he's out of UC Berkeley, if I'm correct. He's out there in California. But he actually demonstrated how atrazine, when he will expose male frogs to atrazine, the frogs essentially will be biologically male, but their brains will be feminized. So the frogs, when they get in the presence of a male frog, the feminized frogs will actually assume the feminine mating position. So essentially, like, it's almost like, you know, the frogs are like women, you know, when they get in the presence of a regular non-chemically altered or chemically castrated frog, it would actually act like and start mating with the male frog as if it was a woman. And when the scientist exposed this, of course, he was discredited, attacked, et cetera, you know, death threats, et cetera. But this chemical, which is found in 94% of American drinking water now, because remember, corn is used all throughout, you know, just about everything in this country is corn now. That's the number one crop we grow here in America. And whenever you spray atrazine on corn, it ends up in the Mississippi River, which ends up in the Gulf of Mexico, and, you know, corn is just widely grown throughout the
country. And they're actually seeing a decrease in male births in some of these communities that are focused on corn. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yes, because the atrazine, it mimics estrogen. It's going to have the endocrine disrupting effect that I mentioned. It's going to block testosterone and mimic estrogen. So in the farm communities where they're growing corn, these people, not only are the people going to be infertile through exposure to atrazine, but it's going to actually cause male babies to be aborted, because, you know, essentially we're all born as females essentially when we're first born. It's not until we undergo, we get exposed to testosterone when men undergo a full masculinization. So it has been proven by scientists that male babies essentially are more, they're harder to come out. because there's a lot more things that could go wrong. So if the mother's really stressed due to war or some type of famine or something that's going on, you know, there's going to be a decrease in the population of male births that occurs because, you know, the fact that, you know, essentially we're all born as female, you know, when we first get developed in the womb. And, you know, and if there's not adequate amounts of testosterone available, then, again, we will be feminized. Not only that, then it will increase the risk of miscarriage on male births. So atrazine does cause miscarriages of male babies, and it also causes men's penises and genitalia to be smaller in these farming communities. So it has been shown that the rates of hypospadia, undescended testicles, are higher in areas where there's higher atrazine exposure. And also, as you mentioned, you know, there are less male babies being born. And this is a global problem. You know, all throughout the world now, there are less men being born because of all these estrogenic endocrine disrupting chemicals that have been released onto the public.
And someone asked in the chat room, and by the way, I should mention that there's a now a Gnostic Media broadcast chat discussion, and I've put the link up on the Gnostic Media website under links on the left side and also up on the top. But somebody asked there to you, if homosexuals were to change their diet to a high-fat, healthy diet, would hormones go back to normal with respect to their core gender? And I'll let you answer that when we come back from this break.
Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, dope for tea and dope for dinner. Fun all night and love and laughter. No remorse the morning after. Where's the sin?
And we're back. And ladies and gentlemen, that's Aldous Huxley's Dream for the World. One thing I should actually say about that song, and of course, that's Chris Mayville's version he called in during the first or second episode. But, you know, that's as Huxley wrote that poem, it's actually the Epsilons, or the lowest caste in society, singing that song. So that may help you with some perspective on that. So, Curtis, I read you someone's question from the chat room. You want to go ahead and hit that one?
Yeah. You know, once people, I mean, in terms of, you know, and I can't necessarily conclusively prove that all people who are gay or transgender, you know, is the result of these chemicals. But I do know for a fact that chemicals cause homosexuality and transgenderism as one of the things that they cause. But once people are exposed to these chemicals, you know, within the womb, in terms of sexual orientation and gender identity, that's permanent. That cannot be reversed because people have to remember that, you know, the brain and, you know, sexual orientation and gender identity are formed within the womb. I do agree with people who espouse that, but they don't necessarily talk about all the factors that are involved with that. So, yeah, it is determined within the womb, but there are chemicals which basically are the determining factor in many cases. And once that is done, that's it. There's no way it can be reversed, essentially. Now, in terms of people who want to improve their health, if they are gay or transgendered, yeah, you should not be consuming.
What if their issue to begin with is a low fat issue, and then they get up to a 70% fat diet? Have you seen any evidence that some people may experience that they get rid of those feelings or that attitude?
I've never heard of that, I've never heard of it, and anyone who espoused it, I would question it, you know, just given kind of my understanding of how, you know, that sexual orientation and gender identity are formed within the womb. Now, of course, you know, if, you know, you're going to get healthier, but it doesn't mean that those homosexual feelings will go away.
But if you're producing more testosterone, for instance, and by the way, you know, the opposite of what most people think, testosterone actually helps men be less violent and more focused and calm, et cetera. And it's like, you know, a lot of these other issues that cause violence. But if it was a fat-related issue and a lack of testosterone issue, if they started eating a lot of fat and cholesterol, would it then change that, or you don't think so at all?
Well, in terms of, like, the chemicals have, I mean, the chemicals do affect testosterone, but, you know, in terms of how they affect sex orientation and gender identity, that occurs while the fetus is developing. And so, I mean, once that occurs, that's it. There's really no way to reverse it. You know, but now in terms of, like, a person who has, you know, let's say a gay person who's eating a low-fat diet, you know, if they eat a high-fat diet, they'll still be gay, but they'll just be healthier. So, you know, I mean, and also, yeah, they will have higher amounts of testosterone, even if they were, you know, even if they were chemically altered within the womb. So it's not going to change the homosexuality. It will improve their overall health, though, just by getting off the grains and getting off the sugars and getting on a healthy fat, high fat diet.
Do you want to field some calls for the last 30 minutes of the interview?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to call in, we'll take some calls, and the number is 800-313-9443. Once again, that's 800-313-9443. And why don't we, while we're waiting to see if we get any calls in, why don't we talk about chemicals in condoms and lubricants as well as in dildos and vibrators?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the chemicals that are found in condoms, there are several chemicals. The first chemical that's found in condoms is parabens. And that's usually because a lot of condoms are lubricated condoms. And parabens are actually estrogenic chemicals. They mimic estrogen. So essentially, they do the same thing, that they block testosterone and they increase the levels of estrogen within men and women. So it's going to have that same effect within the fetus as far as masculinizing women, feminizing men. But not only that, parabens are found in close to about 99%. Of women who have breast cancer. It's found in their breast cancer tissue. And parabens are...
Hold that thought, and we'll be back here in a couple of minutes.
Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So my cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's oh so happy.
And everybody's ladies happy and gentlemen, now. We're back. And Curtis, you want to give out your website again?
Yes, my website is www.drcurtisduncan.com. That's drcurtisduncan.com. And my email address is pretty much the same. It's just drcurtisduncan@gmail.com.
All right, and you were discussing parabens and lubricants before the break. You want to go back to that, and then looks like there's a caller on the line. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, the number to call in is 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443.
Yes, and parabens, as I mentioned, they mimic estrogen, so they will cause a whole host of female reproductive health problems. But not only that, as I mentioned, they are linked to breast cancer. And the majority of women who have breast cancer also have parabens found in their breast tissue. There was a study done that stated that close to 99% of women who have breast cancer have parabens found within their breast tissue. And parabens are actually found within processed food. If you buy cinnamon buns, which, you know, is probably the worst thing ever to consume, they oftentimes put parabens as preservatives in the cinnamon bun, and they use those in lubricants because, you know, and they use them in lubricants as well on the lubricated condoms, and the many different types of lubricants that people can use, you know, in order to have sex. Now, in terms of the other chemical that they use, are the spermicides, and the spermicide it is another chemical which mimics estrogen. It's known as NPEs. That's the chemical name. It's oxal 9 is the exact chemical name. And this chemical, it breaks down into a chemical which mimics estrogen. And worldwide, this breakdown product, which are known as NPEs, essentially like non-polyphenol oxalates, they are the reason why so many fish have female sex organs now. You know, this, the feminization of the animal kingdom, if you will. And this chemical is found in condoms which have the spermicide added to it. Not only that, but the spermicide actually strips the lining of a woman's vagina, which increases her risk of herpes and a whole host of sexually transmitted diseases, including a whole host of sexually transmitted diseases. So that's the reason, you know, that's the reason why lubricated and spermicidal condoms are really bad. Now, in terms of the sex toys actually contain phthalates. And this was one of the things that, you know, was kind of, you know, came out of the feminist women's liberation movement was the advent of vibrators and sex toys. And the sex toys contain phthalates. And phthalates, you know, women are using dildos to please themselves. Then, you know, they are increasing their levels of phthalates within their bodies. And phthalates are a chemical which blocks testosterone and mimics estrogen. So it will increase women's risk of developing type 2 diabetes, obesity, because a lot of these endocrine disrupting chemicals, because they mimic estrogen, are also known as obesogens, because estrogen is a hormone which is a fat promoting and storing hormone, meaning that when you have high levels of estrogen within your body, whether you're a man or you're a woman, you're telling your body to go into fat storing and promoting mode, essentially. That's why women gain weight when they become pregnant, is because their estrogen levels increase. It has nothing to do with their intake of food. You know, calories in, calories out, has to do with hormones. So she increases her levels of phthalates, and when developing male fetus is exposed to phthalates, of course, it's going to, you know, phthalates, as I mentioned, to cause a developing boy to want to play with dolls and wear dresses. But not only that, it actually shrinks a man's genitalia. So a lot of men, you know, there's been a dramatic increase in male genital birth defects. So it's bad enough they do circumcision, but now men are having penises no bigger than 2 inches, which makes them just totally functionally sterilized, essentially, because they have hypospadia, which comes about through all these different chemicals. So those are the things that are found within, you know, all the sex products. The dildos, particularly dildos, which are made through rubber jelly or jelly dildos, those are very common because they're made through PVC plastic. So the jelly dildos,
like the Fleshlight and all of this stuff, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I mean it's a type of, I think it's known as a jelly, rubber jelly. I don't know. I know very little about, you know, dildos.
Yeah. Well, I know there's certain podcasters out there who, you know, had commercials basically every day for this stuff and would, you know, give them out for free. You know what, Curtis? We have a couple of callers on the line. Do you want to start taking calls?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Mike in Kentucky.
Am I on?
Yeah, Mike, you're on.
Okay, I never did hear that little pop you usually hear when you call in, but... I haven't read your web page, and I was having a little trouble understanding some of the letters you were saying, but between listening on a bandwidth feed that's not very good here and the just the general distortion there, but I might ask you to pronounce that web page as a word.
Sure. My website is Gnostic Media, which is GNOSTICmedia.com, and Curtis's is... DrCurtisDuncan.com. Is that correct, Curtis?
Yes, DrCurtisDuncan.com.
Okay, so Curtis Duncan probably will come up in a search engine.
Sure.
But I had an industrial hygienist repeatedly correct me on this, and I'd been studying it for, at this point, I guess I've been studying this issue for probably 16 years. And the whole Angelina Jolie thing was quite the ruse, and they've been trying to convince us that the problems are in your genetics, and that, you know, the whole BRCA1 gene and the E2 estrogen 2 sensitivity syndromes and all this crap, it totally leaves out what you're talking about, these actually mutagenic chemicals. They are genetically mutating our human genome, and that's what, you know, a lot of people say endocrine disruption. Or like you said, I forget what you've used, some other terms here, but the parent term for all of this this soup of chemicals is mutagens. Our local brainiacs located a plastics factory within probably 300 yards of the school compound where all of the youngsters in the county except for two grade schools go. They're putting all their eggs in one basket. And this guy moved from California. He was a professional industrial hygienist and, you know, sat down with them at their EPA air permit hearing and gave a talk. And, you know, they hassled him the whole time through it. I've got it on tape. But when I interviewed him afterwards, you know, he kept correcting me when I said estrogen-mimicking chemicals or endocrine disruptors. He said, no, mutagens. These are actually genetically mutating us as a species, and apparently it goes, you know, across species. And you had said something about some of these chemicals mutating the fish. It was my understanding that some of the genetically modified premarins, like the you know, pregnant mare's urine that's been genetically modified, those chemicals persist through the environment. They don't break down, a lot like some of these Teflons and those type of chemicals. They don't break down as they go through one species to another, and so they continue to do their dastardly deeds on down the stream, so to speak, as their water is processed. They're persistent. Have you looked at that?
Essentially, how the chemicals are like mutagens, you mentioned.
Yeah, and they don't break down. Some of these hardened chemicals, like what's in the birth control hormone pills.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct. The chemicals, they are mutagenic and they are carcinogenic. They are mutagenic in that, you know, they do change you know, our DNA essentially. Not only that, but they change the way our genes express via epigenetics.
A lot of this environmentalism stuff is meant to distract us into this global warming stuff and not looking at these chemicals. It's almost like the environmentalist movement has been hijacked to distract people.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Mike. That and chemtrails as well. Mike, we're going to go to the next caller now. Let's go to Frederick in Michigan.
Hey, guys. Hey, great broadcast, John.
Thank you, Frederick. How are you?
Thanks. Glad you're on with Dr. Duncan. And real quick, consistent with your present theme song, you remember the one, Don't Worry, Be Happy?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I thought that might be a rather interesting...
Well, sure. You know, a few years ago, it must have been 5 years ago now, I interviewed Dr. Barbara Ehrenreich, who wrote the book Bright Sided, and you can find that in the Gnostic Media podcast archives. Maybe I should try to get her on this show. But, you know, she goes into the whole promotion of positive thinking and how it's undermined America. And she went through cancer and everything. And while she was fighting the cancer, everybody just kept telling her that she wasn't being positive enough.
Oh, yeah. All right.
That's an awesome book.
What's that?
That's an awesome book. I read it.
Oh, you have read it. Great. Well, you and I have both read it, and I do recommend others read it as well. You know, when you know, positive thinking is essentially killing the messenger and using ad hominem attacks to dismiss information before you've studied it. And, you know, people think that they can judge information, et cetera, before they've actually looked at it. You know, it's a logical impossibility, but you try to present a lot of this information to these new age hippies, et cetera, and they'll dismiss it before they've ever heard it based on, oh, well, if it's positive or negative. And obviously, who does it benefit if you won't even look at evidence before you make a decision? Did you have a specific question, Fred?
Yes, I do, yeah. Dr. Duncan, I found a company out of Utah, SIBU, Cebu, I guess it's Cebu International. Now, they produce a sea buckthorn, like a puree, and they have oils. Well, I noticed the heat has been quite high out there, and I asked the guy about the safety of shipping, because he says we have a special plastic that's totally safe. I asked for the number, and the guy, Alex, didn't know the number. He just said, well, we ship it all the time. It's as good as glass. I've never heard of a plastic as good as glass, especially in 90, 100 degree temperatures inside a truck for 3 or 4 days, along with the warehouse. So I'm thinking there would be a significant chemical reaction going on there. And the next quick question is, I've been a coconut guy all my life, and I suddenly discovered maybe 30 years ago that the in-store packaged coconut just happened to have this marvelous lubricant called propylene glycol. And when I checked with a couple pharmacists, they looked it up, and they told me it's considered low-toxicity antifreeze. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, what would you consider propylene glycol to be in coconut or any other food as some kind of a safe additive? And, you know, what about that? What's your take on plastic being safe in this extremely hot temperatures?
I'm glad you asked that, and you know, not, and I'm going to pass this over to Curtis in just a second, because I was going to bring up plastics and food wrappers and things and how they put all of that stuff in there. So, Curtis, to you, is there any safe plastic?
No such thing. Not to my knowledge as of yet. Maybe they'll be safe down the line. The reason why most plastics are not safe is because they're virtually all of them contain chemicals which mimic estrogen.
That make them soft and flexible, is that correct?
Exactly. And what they do is, I mean, they're slick. So they might say, okay, well, we'll take out bisphenol A, but they'll put like 20 different other chemicals which act just like bisphenol A, and they'll say BPA-free to manipulate people into buying the plastic and assuming that the plastics are safer when they're not. You know, when we discussed this on your previous podcast about, you know, about Dr. Wow, his selling of BPA-free plastic, and, you know, and giving them to children. There are no safe plastics. Virtually all of them contain estrogen. And what happens is that when you put liquid in the plastics or you expose them to high amounts of heat or ultraviolet light, the chemicals leach, meaning that they'll leach into the food, they'll leach into the water. So, you know, and again, he might be referring to BPA-free plastics, but it's been shown conclusively that BPA-free plastics are actually worse than traditional plastics, which contain bisphenol A. So there are, you know, no safe plastics that have been produced. In regards to your second question, propylene glycol is antifreeze, and it is not something that you want to be consuming. You know, it's bad enough when you consume deodorant and has propylene glycol in it. You know, it can get into your bloodstream and cause a whole host of health issues. But you definitely do not want to ingest propylene glycol. So the person's assertion that it has low toxicity, that's kind of like a sign. I mean, you know, if you ask a scientist and they ask about bisphenol A and phthalates, they'll say that it has low toxicity. And what they mean by that is that if you consume it, it's not going to kill you. Like, you know, if you ingest, it's not going to kill you like within 5 minutes. But, you know, being repeatedly exposed to these chemicals will kill you over time. That's what they mean by low toxicity. It just means that it's not like acutely toxic, meaning that's going to kill you within like 5 minutes, like chlorine gas, something like that.
Hey, I got to tell you, Jan, I used to be a lifeguard when I was in college.
You used to be a what?
University. A lifeguard.
Okay.
Lifeguard. And you know, it was in an indoor natatorium, and I used to get brainstem headaches after breathing the chlorine toxic air in the natatorium. It'd take about 30 minutes. And then I'd have to take a break, go outside.
Well, I know the feeling. I was a swimmer for many years competitively, but we got to take this break, and we'll be back in a minute, and we'll take some more calls.
Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, dope for tea and dope for dinner. Fun all night and love and laughter.
Ladies and gentlemen,
no remorse the morning after.
We're back. And, you know, I do want to take the last caller, Irene in California. Before we go to her, you know, I just wanted to mention to you, Curtis, what about something that is, you know, and in the chat room there, people are talking about this, but, you know, you think about something like microwaves in plastic.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell the audience about that? Have you looked into that at all?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is extremely horrible to ever put plastic in a microwave. You know, when you go and buy some of these frozen dinners and it's in a plastic packaging and it has a plastic wrap, you're just getting
as if what the microwave itself does to the food isn't bad enough, but then you're nuking it and it's hot with all of this plastic, so all of that stuff would be leaching right into the food.
Exactly. And what happens is that oftentimes when you put plastic wrap on food, the plastic melts onto your food.
Yeah.
So you're consuming plastic, and the chemicals are leaching out from the plastic container that you're microwaving it in, and the chemicals leaching out from the plastic wrap that you're microwaving in.
Right. Let's get Irene from California on. Irene, are you there?
I'm right here. Yeah, I had a question, like, you know, we've got all this transgender and all these children and, you know, growing up teenagers. But, okay, if you got a guy that wants to be a girl, I mean, what do you do to reverse that? Isn't there something to give him? I mean, you could put titties on a man because he wants a bunch of estrogen, like Caitlyn or Bruce Jenner, that weirdo.
Caitlyn Jenner?
Testosterone?
Yeah, you know, I mean, well, think, you know, and regarding Bruce Jenner, think about the whole Wheaties thing. I mean, this guy was promoting wheat and all this garbage to the kids, you know.
He was my hero.
Yeah, but what do you, you know.
50, you know, and when this, he did the decathlon or whatever he did, I mean, this was a male. And now we're finding out this male wants to be a female. You know, it's all about money. This, I was going through this stuff and I found a picture.
Curtis answer that. Do you, you know, and he kind of already did with another questioner in the thing. But is there anything that people can do at all if they have children or something who have been through this, other than, you know,
testosterone and reverse it?
Well, I mean, the first thing is that definitely. I mean, of course, you know, for health reasons, if you're concerned about, you know, the transgenderism, definitely don't give your kids any soy infant formula, because that, you know, that is been proven to, you know, to get at a young age to make them gay. Now, in terms of, you know, reversing it, like for adults or for like little children, like 9-year-olds, et cetera, again, I haven't come across any, you know, from my research, the chemicals, what they do is within the womb. And what occurs in the womb is permanent. You know, there's no way to reverse that. And homosexuality and transgenderism is not necessarily about, yeah, I mean, if you're like, for example, if you're a guy and you get estrogen, yeah, you can kind of convert yourself into a woman. But if you're, you know, homosexual, that's not due to lack of testosterone or due to lack of estrogen. It can be caused by being exposed to chemicals which block testosterone or mimic estrogen. And if it's blocking testosterone, it's going to feminize the boy, you know, so he'll be a biological male but will have the brain of a female. That's permanent. You can't reverse that because, like, you know, his brain is developing when he's developing within the womb. Or in case of a woman, if she gets exposed to estrogen, it masculinizes her brain, so she's biologically a female but has the brain of a male. You can't reverse that because the brain is already developed within a certain pattern.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up with that. And ladies and gentlemen, that's it for today. Thank you, callers, and thank you, Curtis Duncan. Be sure to check out his website.
Oh, everybody's happy now.
All right, man.